And now this, the untold stories of starting a creative agency.
We are Paul and Jeroen, both advertising creatives with roughly 14 years of work experience at ad agencies and tech startups in Amsterdam as well as New York City. Now, for us, the time feels right to start our own thing. And now this, that's going to be the name for our creative shop. But how do you actually start a creative business? What are the do's and don'ts, the pros and cons? To find out, we're interviewing the people who came before us, founders of successful and inspirational creative agencies and businesses. People that do cool shit. But we don't want to keep this valuable information to ourselves. We want to share it with the creative community. That's why we started this podcast, a collaboration with the awesome folks at music production studio AMP Amsterdam. All right.
Yes.
Got it.
That's it.
So we're So we're here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, with my friend Jeff Johnson, co-founder and creative director of The Arrivals, a New York City-based outerwear fashion label that launched in 2014, selling direct-to-consumer online and specializing in coats and jackets. Jeff is an architect originally and decided to give up his profession to pursue a new endeavor. He founded The Arrivals with his partner, Cal Vapuri, if I pronounce his name right, an investor. So, a promising new fashion label founded by two guys with no fashion experience at all. So, Jeff, welcome, dude. Welcome.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having
Morning.
Me.
Yeah.
Welcome to New York.
Thanks. So, we would love to hear a little bit about your story and about how The Arrivals started.
Yeah.
Because you were an architect, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, what I always wondered is, were you always a little bit more interested in fashion design, or wasn't that the reason why you gave up your job and left?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, as I think back through my various, probably I could almost consider them like pivot points, right? Like, what are these moments of inflection where you're kind of on a certain trajectory and you change somehow? I think, you know, even thinking back to when I was a young kid growing up in San Diego, almost this idea of, I remember being on a ride home from like a park one day with some family friends, and someone asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. Mm-hmm. And I said an architect. I think I was probably about 8 years old.
Oh, yeah.
I actually didn't know what an architect was, but I felt like somehow it was someone that was probably like smarter than I was,
okay.
Someone that was kind of like strategic, that somehow like took design into consideration. And there were like these big ideas that as a young kid, I didn't really know what those meant, but somehow it seemed exciting. And I almost feel like if you kind of boil down those pieces of like, what are the core foundations of say an architect, like those were the things that really inspired me. Mm. And as I kind of like, you know, grew up, went through life and continue to go through life, but you know, these various moments, I think those founding principles are still really what guides my approach in these various projects. Mm. And you know, whether it be kind of designing a building, creating a brand, I think there's something about kind of visual storytelling, this idea of kind of coming up with something based on your kind of viewpoint, your perspective on the world, your like what makes you know, Jeroen, you know, what do you think is important, and then how do you kind of create a story around that for people to kind of believe in, for people to, you know, feel like that is something that they have an emotional connection to, something that they can identify with, and something for like all stakeholders. So whether it's consumer, whether it's kind of a business pitch, that they kind of understand and are willing to trust you. And I think, you know, that kind of 360 degree strategy is something that I initially learned how to do while working as an architect in the Netherlands. And I think The Arrivals is kind of that next pivot point of really figuring out, okay, what is kind of a root challenge opportunity? And then how do you kind of create this entire world that feels very, I think, identifiable, very relatable, at the same time, like very aspirational. And you have to think through all parts of brand, product, you know, tone of voice, et cetera. I think basically, did I always know I wanted to do something in fashion? Absolutely not. But at the same time, like being able to kind of sculpt a story from like a root concept that you kind of, you know, identify, and then you really take something that is nothing and create something. I think that was the really rich opportunity and is kind of impetus for the arrivals and what we see as being kind of ongoing opportunity as we develop and evolve the brand.
Nice.
Because you lived in the Netherlands for 4 years?
Yep, it was just under 4 years. So I was hanging out in your old, well, your stomping ground.
Yep.
I lived in the pipe, worked for an architecture firm called UN Studio. All the, you know, Nederlanders know the Erasmusbrug in, in Rotterdam. I did not build that, but
you did.
Basically, but that's the architecture firm that I worked for. So basically, you know, right when I was graduating from Pratt, which is a basically a design architecture school here in Brooklyn, applied to UN Studio in the Netherlands, and kind of immediately got this position, which was a little bit of a surprise.
As an architect? Is this your first job?
No, I worked actually for 2 years in California. And then while I was in graduate school here in New York, I did like a handful of jobs. So, you know, cumulatively had quite a few years of experience before. But this was like the first, like, okay, entering the big leagues of, you know, expect to work 7 days a week, expect to work very long hours, and basically was brought on to help design a, or basically produce a design competition. So for a lot of these big architecture firms, they're invited to say, we're doing a new, I don't know, museum in Berlin, and we're in, the kind of committee is inviting the top 10, say, architecture firms from around the world. All the firms will kind of assemble a little team of 6 to 10 people, and they will bust their ass for 5 to 8 weeks on basically producing a project. At the end of that kind of design competition, probably like a marketing or kind of advertising competition as well, one is selected, and that then turns into a physical project. So basically that's what I was brought on to kind of help you know, design
the
this
new
project.
Business team.
Yeah,
exactly.
It kind of works the same way in advertising as well.
Yeah.
New business pitch.
Yeah. And so we ended up
just
designing.
Bust your ass off for a couple of months and hopefully you'll
win the, I mean, it's perfect for like just graduating from school. You're young, you're hungry, you know, moving to Amsterdam, I had zero kind of network. So why not pour every ounce of my kind of energy into this competition? Yeah. And we ended up winning. And basically what the design was a university in Singapore for basically MIT's like new sister campus. It's called SUTD, Singapore University of Technology and Design. And basically this little 5 week project turned into like a 3.5 year project. And it's literally there. The campus is about 30,000 students now, and it's this crazy thing to kind of, you know, again, start with this little idea and kind of try to kind of, you know, first convince your team, explain it through visuals, storytelling, concept, then kind of now pitch this to the jury and the panel of the competition. And then you kind of, you just at the beginning, you can never see the end picture, right, of this thing actually existing. But I think that was just this really amazing experience of kind of coming into this with absolutely like no expectations. I actually was kind of planning, okay, I'll move to Amsterdam, be there for 6 months, and then, you know, just kind of put that on my little, like, you know, bucket list of things that I've done. But it was kind of a really nice opportunity to just be involved in a really 360 degree project.
That's amazing.
When did you make the switch to the
to like the next thing?
Do you think living in the Netherlands had anything to do with that, or
to like basically switch career?
After 3.5 years working on this project, you were like,
what do you think of the fashion scene in
I think that would be naive to say that like the, you know, 300 days of rain and gray weather didn't have something to do with me starting an outdoor company. But so basically it was probably like early 2013. I had been there for about 3 years, and was kind of getting the itch like, okay, this has been a really valuable experience. Some of these projects are like wrapping up, and it was kind of this time to understand or to make a decision of, should I like renew my contract, start on all these new and upcoming projects? Or, you know, do I maybe like think about going back to New York, which is something that was always, you know, inspiring to me, just having been here for 3 years during graduate school. And essentially during that time, and this is a random story, but I flew back to basically Washington, D.C., where my friend Calvin Peary was kind of going to a weekend festival. And so I crashed with him for the weekend, and he was basically talking about all the kind of recent successes that he had kind of been a part of. And yeah. This is basically, he's kind of a serial entrepreneur and investor, involved in a lot of these young direct-to-consumer brands. Like Sweet Green. If you guys are familiar with Sweetgreen, Warby Parker, Harry's, Reformation. All of these young brands have kind of identified a market opportunity from like a business model of, okay, the market typically exists like this, but how can we bypass some inefficiency in order to kind of offer product at a more accessible price point while maintaining quality? So in the Netherlands, you have like Ace and Tate, I know, is like one of the ones that's super popular, right?
Yeah.
But so we were just kind of talking about that, and I think it was like probably two friends being a little bit naive, but saying like, man, why don't we just try to do something, right?
Yeah.
Like, how good can these other guys be? Why don't we just, you know, give it a shot? And, you know, that weekend conversation had so many bad ideas, and it turned into probably a 3-month email chain of literally everything you would throw on the wall and see if it stuck, from, you know, footwear to denim to knitwear, jewelry. At one point, the brand was called Made with Lasers, and it was about laser cutting stuff. So that was probably
That's
the one
awesome.
That stuck
you
for.
Still do that.
I know. Literally, we. I was sitting. So I moved back probably like end of 2013, and that was a point after like 3 months of kind of email chains back and forth. Decided, all right, like. You know what, let's like take this next step and move back to New York and just kind of see what happens. And
okay, so you moved back before you had
so
all right, I don't have a job, I don't have any income, but I'll just move back to the most expensive city in the world.
Yeah, it was quite
see
a,
how it goes.
A leap of faith.
That's awesome.
There was a moment where Cal and I were in his apartment, kind of working out of a messy bedroom. And we were kind of talking through this Made with Lasers idea, and I had this little like epiphany moment where I was like, I can't have left this career in architecture, which was, you know, pretty promising, to like cut holes in a t-shirt. And so that was a moment probably around like December 2013, where we're like, okay, like, how do we focus on a single product category? What's a product category that like I think really relates to, say, like my foundations, say in design, architecture, creative, and then also pairs that like clear market business kind of differentiation, in the sense that there's like an existing market out there, there's a high demand, but these products are somehow overpriced or inaccessible to the people that we feel like really appreciate that kind of design and integrity. And so basically we came to the idea of outerwear. Almost outerwear is like the first layer of architecture for people. Like, what is this kind of very basic thing that you put on to protect you from the elements? What are kind of areas of or foundations of architecture and design that can kind of transcend just the medium of a building, of material, attention to detail, modularity, kind of material innovation? So I think from a creative standpoint, it was like, okay, this is like, it's all clicking, this stuff makes sense. At the same time, then from like a market standpoint, where's the business opportunity? I know like my aesthetic, and I think like a lot of my peers, they really kind of appreciate brands that do take that time and consideration and material quality, like in attention to like craftsmanship. Maybe not contemporary, but at least like thoughtful design, and something that kind of blends that element of like being kind of modern or relevant at the same time as timeless, right? And so like, how do we kind of create a brand that represents those pillars? And realizing that, you know, whether it's Philippa Ka, Rag & Bone, Acne, Helmut Lang, Alexander Wang, APC, etc., there's all of these brands that really use outerwear as their kind of highest price point product. And there's absolutely a very large percentage of females, especially in New York, that have no problem dropping, say, $1,500 to $4,000 on a leather jacket. And so realizing, okay, can we first go figure out where all these like luxury or contemporary brands are manufacturing their product? Two, can we basically source the same materials and then really just design it through our own product and aesthetic or design approach? And basically that was kind of the impetus. So like the kind of my creative background as well as like the market opportunity, like really kind of clarified themselves in basically January of 2014. And then it was like off to the races. Literally, like that was the point where I know, Jeroen, you mentioned before, like how do guys with no fashion experience start this thing? Mm-hmm. That was like the moment where you're like, okay, well, now we have this idea that we think is cool.
Yeah.
And we have, let's just see how inexperienced we are. It was kind of the thing. And so, you know, being in Manhattan, one of the luxuries is you literally have everything under the moon right here on this little island. So yeah. The garment district was right up the street, and that was kind of a thing where I was like, all right, I'll kind of rely on my, say, visual communication skills to kind of draw up a design sheet, develop what they call tech packs, which are kind of the technical drawings or blueprints of the collection, and kind of came up with this tightly edited collection of 4 men's pieces, 5 women's pieces, 1 unisex piece, and then went up to the garment district and started kind of like showing these to the various factories.
That's great.
And basically...
So you just walked in?
Yeah.
Knocked on the door. Like,
hey, you know, hey, a friend of a friend introduced us to someone at a design studio. They introduced us to a factory. And pretty soon, like, you know, I'm visiting 3 to 4 factories a day. I think, you know, off the bat, like... The factories were like, they just wanted to get you to produce with them, right? They don't really care. They're like, oh yeah, this is beautiful. We're going to do this for you. It's going to be great. And you know, being new, I'm like, yeah, like, this is sweet. Like these are really good.
So easy.
And so basically like identified one factory that we're like, okay, this one, you know, all the reference checks kind of check out. Let's kind of commit to producing our first sample run, right? Yeah. Essentially when the factory produces their prototypes. 4 weeks go by after handing off kind of our blueprints and we get the samples back. And that was like the first moment where it was like, holy shit, like this is not gonna happen unless like we either somehow have a crash course or we kind of bring on a technical designer. Mm-hmm. And so that was probably around like February of 2014. And from there, basically until October 16th, which was when we launched the arrivals, it was just an all-out sprint of launching the collection.
So did you hire a technical designer or did you just...
So we brought on a freelance technical designer who has been with the company. Like she was a first hire, has been with the company ever since.
Oh, great.
And she's really been, yeah, a big part of like the backbone of the design approach and really kind of like execution of the arrivals.
Yeah. Awesome, dude. So you left your job, you started your own thing. Have you ever regretted giving up that job yet? Have you?
How many times?
Yeah.
Have you experienced like setbacks or?
Sure. So,
any others?
Yeah. So the idea of like regretting leaving architecture, I think that's something where...
It must have been a hard decision, right?
It was a hard decision. I think probably the thing that is, that I felt more was, okay, as you start something that's completely unknown, there's a like a pretty big element of vulnerability. And like that vulnerability never really goes away, but you become, I think, more confident in your decision as you move forward. And so,
yeah.
You know, when I first moved back... Like I kind of mentioned, like we didn't know what this thing was going to be. Was it going to be footwear? Was it going to be jeans? Was it going to be knitwear? Okay, it's going to be jackets.
Yeah.
Why? Are they going to be good? Mm-hmm. Is it going to flop immediately? And I think those kind of questions, especially like I went to school here. I have a good like kind of network of friends that are, you know, architects in New York City, kind of going back and, you know, engaging with my network. It was like, oh, so you're starting like a fashion brand now? What's that about, right?
Mm, and yeah,
I think that was something where definitely not a regret of, say, leaving the industry, but more kind of this like, I think because we haven't done anything yet, right? There was this lack of kind of confidence of knowing, okay, is this thing even going to work, right? And to be honest, we really didn't know. And I think every day, like, you kind of wake up like with that subtle sense of anxiety, mm-hmm. and I think that kind of keeps you sharp.
Yeah,
yeah.
That like everybody keeps you sharp as well, has right?
probably.
So, you know, I think that's something that like constantly evolves. But you know, as we start to kind of further define the brand, further perfect the product, really kind of rely or work on these elements of just like perfecting product, you really begin to become very passionate about this thing, and feel like that passion is kind of well deserved. One of the things that always stood out to me was we opened our first pop-up like last fall, and that was basically a little bit of a test for us and to kind of think through, okay, we launched as a digitally native brand, we created this product, sold it on thearrivals.com as a way to create kind of luxury outerwear, mm-hmm. but get at the consumer at a more accessible price point.
Yeah.
Retail or physical retail wasn't really a part of that equation, but we were like, you know what, our product is not cheap. It's more accessible and it's definitely high value for what you get. But the idea of, you know, visiting the website and maybe discovering the brand for the first time and purchasing, it was, you know, a big ask from the customer. So basically we asked ourselves, can we just start a little pop-up in New York City in the heart of the holiday season, in the heart of Soho? And that was basically a 4-week test for us. But I think just the going back to that like area of like confidence and like really like, I don't know, just being proud of what you kind of have created.
Mm-hmm.
We basically had this like opening event, and at a certain point, like, we're just standing there and you see this room full of like 400 kids that like represent, kind of like the, I think, heartbeat, pulse, electricity of say like New York City creative community.
Yeah.
And I think that was some point where like, again, started from nothing, just a little idea. And then all of these people now feel like this is something that's real, that's worth kind of spending their evening to kind of be there for. That they think is cool, that they're like stoked to kind of be engaged.
Incredible.
Yeah. And so I think like, you know, those little milestones happen all the time, but those are the kind of things that, whether it's architecture, whether it's, you know, building a business from scratch, like I think it's just important to find those little moments where you can kind of like step back and just try to like take a deep breath and understand like, this is what I was working for. It's not about creating a facade
and have a look at
which
you appreciate those little steps.
And I think like that's, I don't know, it's probably like one of the reasons that I was inspired to basically start this is just the opportunity to really like own something almost entirely, right? Like this is absolutely a partnership between Cal and myself, but at the same time, like, it's our story to create. And I think being able to do that is so powerful and I think inspiring and something that we really try to kind of, I think, communicate with our team and make sure that, you know, people feel empowered as well. But that's, I think, the real opportunity for anyone starting their own thing is being able to kind of shape that. And there will always be, whether it's doubt or uncertainty, but like that's the reward. It's kind of pushing this rock up the hill for those little moments.
Do you think it has helped you, the fact that you didn't have any fashion experience, do you think that has worked in your advantage?
I would say yes and no, right? There's
you never really know.
Well, there's absolutely a lot of experiences where it worked to my disadvantage. And, you know, that's clear. I think basically anything you don't know, you're going to have to learn. You're going to make mistakes on the way, right? And so that, I think, has been really valuable because coming from having, again, no knowledge, you are kind of forced to become a professional and you're able to kind of learn all of these things, whether it's kind of marketing, creative direction, photo shoots, product design. So I think, one, that's kind of like the lemonade made from the hardships. I kind of botched that analogy right there.
I love it.
Sounds good.
But in terms of like, did it help? I think at the same time, there's almost like, if you kind of imagine that people within the industry, they really understand what is the ceiling, what are the things that you can and can't do. And I think coming from a outside perspective and having no kind of understanding of what is normal, what is allowed or not allowed, and what is possible and not possible, that's just not kind of a jadedness that we over the years have maybe been hardened by. And it's a bit drastic, but I'll say it for now.
Yeah.
And so I think for us, we've been kind of more willing to try things, not because they are necessarily what everyone else is doing, but because like we don't have anyone or that kind of like experience telling us that we can't do it. And so I think in that way, it's really like worked in our favor.
And people will feel that as well.
Yeah.
They're probably more willing to help you.
Yeah.
Because it's your first time. Oh, I can help you with a sample or I can help you with it.
Yeah. And just being like, I mean, everything from launching a pop-up to like, you know, designing a new product, like there are so many learnings that you go through and you just learn, okay, how challenging this is. But if you knew all of that going into it, you'd probably say, like, we're not going to do that. Like it's a lot of work and, you know, is creating an experience for our community, is having a, you know, additional channel for like product touch point really that important? In hindsight, looking at the kind of benefit, I would say like 100% yes every single day.
Yeah.
But you kind of then think about just the human hours put into that and all the little like speed bumps along the way, you would be...
But it's probably also insecurity. It's holding you back, right?
Yeah.
Well, we don't need that because it's a lot of work.
Yeah. And so I think that's like...
But you kind of know that you need it maybe.
Yeah.
Deep down inside.
Yeah. And I think like in that, I mean, whether it's ignorance is bliss, but I think one, it allows us to kind of test more things. At the same time, there's a lot of learnings that are captured through those tests. And I think additionally, like after every single one of these little tests, I think we're pushing ourselves further to think, how can we try something new the next time? Right. And so it's not just kind of repeating and perfecting, but, you know, as kind of someone that does stand for innovation and creativity, how are we making sure that we're really kind of, you know, thinking of new ideas and being kind of original and authentic with our approach?
Yeah. And going back to the start, you told us about the samples that went wrong, and then maybe a couple of weeks later you had the right samples. What happened when you sold your first jacket, maybe?
Sure.
Was it a family member or was it maybe the first non-family member who
bought it? So the first day we sold our jacket was the day of launch.
Okay.
And of course, like there were quite a few of them, but I would say I almost kind of like equate it to like we launched a brand and it felt like our presentation of our first school project. Like, this was something where like it was freshman year. We kind of came from, I don't know, wherever we came from, and we're kind of putting our ideas forward. And like now really our audience is our customer. But I would say, you know, along the way, the prototypes, they continued to kind of like get better. Like, but we were so, I think, amazed just to see like how things were progressing. Like I have photos that are still on my phone of just like some of the samples, and I look at them now, I'm like, oh my God, these are like terrible. Real bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, and you guys probably do that as well. You look at some of your old creative work and you're like, that is so bad looking. Like what I know now, like my kind of filter for quality is much, I think, denser, right?
Yeah.
But at that time we were so pumped. We're like, oh my God, like it's made out of leather. Like this thing it has sleeves. So the bar was quite low, but I think
actually looks like a jacket.
Yeah. It actually looks like, oh my God. Yeah. But as we got like closer to launch, like it was just, okay, let's continue prototyping as far as we can until basically we have no more time and we absolutely have to go into production.
So you really,
we kind of over
did it like a startup.
Yeah.
So you had a launch date and then you have probably had some press before that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was just talking about a family member, but you were like immediately selling a couple of...
Yeah, it's not like some pre-sale where you can say like, you know, this is a brand launching and we're taking pre-orders. Like it was something where like press hit, I think New York Times on the day of launch, and then Vogue like a few days later.
It was all over.
Yeah, that's also probably the experience from your partner, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's like been a huge...
It's kind of approaching all that stuff like a startup would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah.
I think that's a new approach to... Is that an approach that you don't see often in fashion?
I'd say in the fashion industry, absolutely. Yeah. Like I think one, there's a question that I know you had written down and I'm not to record this, but what was the question about like About like, would you have done this without Cal?
Yeah, because that's what I'm wondering. Cal is an investor, right?
Yeah.
He's partner, but he's also the investor. Do you think you could have done something like this without someone like him, like an investor?
Yeah.
Do you think without an investment, could you have?
Yeah. So I would say you could, but I wouldn't have, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Right? So basically having Cal as kind of a committed investor and partner, that was something that basically allowed me to say, okay, like I will kind of take this departure from my trajectory in architecture, and I will basically dedicate my time and a foreseeable portion of like my future life to this project, right?
Yeah.
If it was just like, you know, him and I, and he's like, you know, he had no kind of background in these successes, I would probably say, that's cool, let's do it as a side project. If it takes off, like we can kind of shift our time to allocate towards this thing as it kind of grows. But I think being able to have that partner with experience kind of in, you know, growing these, I think, super differentiated businesses, that was something that kind of gave me the confidence of, okay, this is not just like a hobby, this is like a full-time commitment, and we have to do everything we can to make this work. And I think, you know, part of that creates a lot of pressure because, you know, we're both kind of, we have skin in the game of like time and money.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it provides a lot of opportunity just to leverage those networks,
which
I think the fashion industry is not very good at doing, especially for like young brands. I think, you know, we always think of like, okay, is this, I think on the polarized sides of the spectrum, is it like an art project versus just like a pure business? And it's not either. It has to kind of, you know, encompass real elements of like cultural expression and creativity, but at the same time it has to be functional. I think those are the two like worlds that we really bring together. And something that, you know, a lot of fashion brands as they start out, they don't have that kind of yin and yang polarity pulling them kind of in two directions, which I think, you know, forces you to kind of, you know, be more of a realist rather than an optimist on either side of the table.
Yeah.
But I like the startup approach because it's also like thinking bigger.
Yeah.
You know, instead
totally.
Of just creating one jacket or something like that, but also get your social media game on point from the start. And
sure.
Dream big.
Dream big, but also make it look big.
Yeah.
And people will be more interested.
That's true, because you have to convince consumers to trust you as a brand.
Yeah. Right?
And so how did you, because branding, especially in fashion, the brand is more important than anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you build that brand, and how do you get people to trust you enough to buy an item from you instead of any other established brand? Because especially as a new kid in town.
Yeah. I think there's like two pieces to that. One, it's having like a distinct point of view, and two, making sure that every component of the brand reinforces that and really kind of stands up to that point of view. And so I think for us, like we kind of talk about just these, again, like foundational elements of like form and function, or like performance and expression, right? Like if you think about outerwear as a whole, like this is a product category that's really rooted in performance, but I think how do we go further than that and make sure that it kind of expresses some element of, you know, design, kind of minimalist aesthetic, really kind of, again, is representative of like kind of the, I guess, just aesthetic expression that relates with people.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we kind of, again, find that sweet spot between like form and function, or performance and expression. And I think that should really ring true through everything we do, whether it's our kind of packaging, whether it's our like social media tone of voice, whether it's our visuals, whether it's the product itself. And then I think you really have to stick true to basically building that customer trust. Like if, you know, you have a beautiful brand, but your product is subpar, people will be convinced by the brand, they'll purchase the product, they might purchase it again, but they won't purchase it after that. And I think that's something where like you think of brands that have been able to kind of build that identity and then can follow through with their product. And, you know, is that someone like an Apple or is it someone like a Levi's? Like, they don't have to be necessarily super high price point items, but they do kind of maintain that kind of customer, I think, just appreciation through, you know, basically consumer trust.
Yeah.
And so that's something that's super important for us is how can we make sure that like all these things that we talk about from a branding perspective and, you know, how we position ourselves in the market, that the product and that product experience really has to kind of stand up to kind of the voice that we're speaking with.
Mm.
So yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So you mentioned social media. How important is social media to you and to the brand?
Yeah, I would say it's like, it's a really useful channel for us to do a lot of things. Like one, being able to, one, have a touch point to our audience on a daily basis of kind of speaking about, you know, what are the new products, what are the new activations and experiences that we kind of have happening as a brand. You know, emailing people every single day is something where, you know, one, we just don't want to inundate our audience at that cadence. And so social media is a really valuable tool to be able to kind of, you know, connect and basically voice those projects and products.
Do you have a dedicated social media team now? Because I remember when you started, you did mostly yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
like three jobs at the same
time. Yeah. So we do. We have kind of a community manager, which is, you know, basically someone that is really that kind of touch point of the arrivals and can be one, like, you know, DMs, I think, are just something that's amazing on Instagram, being able to kind of, you know, have this immediate kind of communication channel with anyone, right? And that's something where, you know, for us as a brand, it's really valuable to be able to kind of like say, okay, this is an artist or a musician or a creative that we're really inspired by. Would love to just like send them a message, and being able to have that fluidity is really amazing. At the same time, I think our consumers, our audience has that exact same luxury. And so there's all these people saying, oh, I want a job. When are you guys coming to Amsterdam? Do you guys ship to Australia? And so being able to kind of have this communication chain or channel where people can kind of engage directly with the brand is extremely valuable. And it's like, it's a lot. There's a lot of messages that come in. And so, you know, having a team that's one kind of dedicated to being able to kind of, you know, speak to that audience. But at the same time, like, that's almost the brand's like heartbeat, right? Like, I think that's something where,
especially for an online brand as you guys are, right?
So
you need to, it's super important to have that.
Yeah.
That's what it used to be, the store itself. So people walk by and they saw something.
Instagram is your store in a way.
Yeah.
Like your window display.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now they go on your Instagram and they see the new collection, or they ask something to the clerk or
store manager.
It's very important. And it's your window to the world now.
Sure. And it just shows you like, okay, why should I be even thinking about this brand? Why should I continue to check in? Right. And I think that like is probably like the epitome of the definition of like a pulse, a heartbeat, kind of that electricity. Like, who are the people that we're engaging with? Who are the people that like might be showing up in our jackets, not necessarily on our feed, but like, you know, you can always go to the tagged photos and see kind of like those people that then become kind of a representation of, okay, who is this brand actually for? What does it kind of that look like? So I think being able to kind of get a deeper understanding that, okay, you see the brand and the product via the website, but via social media, you kind of get to see the community, right? And who these people are and who represents it and what are all the little things that go beyond product and really speak to kind of, again, that electricity of the brand.
Mm.
And I think that is just so important.
Yeah.
Like if we don't have that, then we don't have kind of any reason to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's like, it's a constant part of our strategy. I think like Instagram stories are also like, you guys all know, but just an amazing like platform to be able to kind of, you know, do these kind of less polished, right? Like more storytelling initiatives that kind of have a longer series kind of format in which you can kind of tell people about events, show them kind of live experiences of how do we exist kind of beyond the product.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely kind of a valuable platform for us. And then at the same time, like, you know, being able to start to test out digital marketing through those platforms. You know, traditional retailers really exist because they function as kind of the marketer for a brand, right? And so if you think of APC, for instance, if you saw APC in Beinkorf or in Barney's or, you know, basically the brand APC is paying those retailers a portion of their profit in order to market their product.
Right? Okay, yeah.
So as a direct consumer brand, we don't have to do that, which is amazing. But at the same time, we don't have that visibility via those retailers.
So
how do we create that visibility? There's one kind of a natural organic viral coefficient that is the most valuable part. But at the same time, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest are all kind of players in almost becoming like the new retailer.
Yeah.
And so basically, you know, working through digital marketing strategies to kind of, again, create this visibility for your product in order to get more eyeballs. And then essentially that diverts the eyeballs to our website. And then it's about creating very kind of engaging, informative, elevated and on brand kind of storytelling elements through our website to make sure that, okay, they don't just land directly on the product page, but you kind of bring them in through a sequence in which you explain the brand to them. You kind of explain not necessarily what, but more why. Like, why should they care about this brand? Why should they care about the product? And why is it different? And so that's kind of a way in which, you know, the social media game has kind of transformed the retail landscape in terms of just the visibility that these, you know, social media platforms have and the opportunity for them to kind of drive traffic.
And I think it's even better because if you're in a department store, you're always next to other brands. There's,
Totally.
Or if something happens with the department store, it also reflects on your brand.
I mean,
Instagram is just a nondescript.
Sure. And you have full control over it, which I think is the thing. Like, the beauty is just, I think, one, all of these success stories kind of started with the idea of, like, how do we do this entire thing ourselves, right? Like, how do we kind of not subject ourselves to the vulnerability of working with a third party or working with a middleman or working with a retailer? And in doing so, we just have kind of control over the really the fate of our brand, our product. And I think, you know, just like you said, having your product next to, say, a brand that you feel like is, you know, either kind of bringing down, douchey, right? Or, you know, bringing down kind of like the product quality, or it's like too luxury, right? It just is not aligned with your brand.
Yeah,
or
and say, also do the discounts and stuff like that.
Exactly, liquidating discounting them at the end of the season. And so, you know, being able to bypass that and do it all on your own terms and serve it to who you want to serve it to. It's just a way to really curate your story through every kind of step of the process, which, you know, is a pretty like revolutionary change.
But even though you're telling your story online and people can interact and almost experience the clothing through Instagram and on your platform, you still wanted to. Why do you still think it's important to open a physical store Why do you think that is necessary? Because do you think people still need to touch and feel the product? Yeah. Do you think that's still missing?
Yeah, no, there's very basic human behaviors that like, I don't think we're that.
You can't take them away with social media.
Right? Yeah. I don't know, like Siri is cool, but like she's not a girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, from day one, really when we launched, like back on October 16th, we started getting emails that day of like, hey, where can I like see this product? Where can I try it on?
Yeah.
And our first step was, okay, let's basically invite people into our showroom.
You've been there. Going to your studio.
I wanted to
feel it and try it on.
Absolutely. And so I think, you know, being able to see a glossy picture online and kind of be like, oh, this is a cool brand, but how does it really relate to me? And I think, you know, having that physical experience where you can touch the product, feel kind of the quality of the materials, feel the weight of the jacket is something that will always be really important. And so, you know, as a, again, like a digitally native brand, how can we begin to test those things? You know, for us, like our average order value, like with jackets is quite high. It's not like a direct consumer sock brand or a t-shirt brand where you buy it for like $15.
Yeah.
And if they, if the socks suck, you return them, or do you just keep them because screw it, it was only $15 and like returning it is more challenging.
Yeah, you'll probably check out the website at least 15 times before you buy a $700 coat, right? So
yeah. And so how do you kind of create these opportunities to basically, again, further educate the customer and really just like provide that experience that at some point you can do so much storytelling online and kind of give so many kind of helpful visuals, helpful kind of copy. But there is some point just that inability to kind of express some of those things unless you see and feel the product in person. And so that's something with, you know, a brand that is so seasonal is a little bit of a luxury as well. Because if you think about like, you know, brick and mortar, that's something where everyone's revenue, most brands' revenue, unless maybe you're like a bikini brand, is going to be like Q3 and Q4. That's just, you know, how the market works. That's when people like to buy. For us, like we have a product category that's also very relevant for Q3 and Q4. And so the ability to have pop-ups really focused kind of in those few months is very easy for us, and not having to worry, not easy, but having pop-ups during those like easier months makes sense with the kind of the brand and the product. And at the same time, being able to kind of avoid, say, real estate overhead for say 9 months of the year is a real luxury that kind of we have this ability to say, okay, the arrivals kind of emerged in this city when it was completely relevant and kind of the heart of whatever that network is, and then it disappeared. And like there's some kind of like, I don't know, kind of spontaneous arrival and disappearance, and like it came and went almost without a trace. And I think that's just something that I think is like a little bit mysterious, a little bit cool, and something that has been really beneficial for our kind of strategy.
So that's the reason why you don't want a permanent store in the same region.
Yeah, I think, you know, having a permanent store, it will always be kind of a pipeline dream. This idea of like having a place where, you know, at any time of the year you can go and kind of experience the product and the brand and get kind of a deeper understanding of like, what does it actually feel like? What is like the tactility of the space? What does it smell like? What is the music playing? But at
that's future talk.
At the same time, you need that product that really is representative for, okay, it's June in New York City and you guys know it's like 90 degrees and sweaty. And so having a place full of jackets is like, it just, for me, and I think for a consumer, feels a little bit out of touch, right? And so I think the first step is continuing this kind of thoughtful evolution of the product. Something that we were talking about earlier, Yaron, and making sure that that is like perfect. And then we can kind of think about the physical experiences that kind of, you know, are able to speak to that as well.
And when you guys started, how we often talk about where do we want to be in a couple of years? What's the goal? When you guys started, how far ahead did you set your goal? Did you plan? And is it anywhere near, or is it the
So I would
where
say
you are right now,
like it's a really interesting practice of being in the weeds and trying to be outside of them. Like it's just the term of being so close to the project, but then also trying to have the foresight and the perspective to think about the big picture. And so that's just a dance that we're like constantly engaged in. I think it's super important for kind of any, you know, starting business to be able to have this kind of, I think, duality of not just being a dreamer or not just being someone that's executing, but really to kind of challenge yourself to do both. How can you kind of be so engaged and focused in kind of that immediate project, but at the same time, like, you're kind of not missing the forest for the tree. You have that ability to kind of look and say like, okay, this thing needs to be perfect, but like there's a whole opportunity outside of that. And so kind of to your question, I think for us, we've always basically stood for this idea of like an independent design company. Like myself and Cal, there's no kind of external, say, investment. And so what are the things that we feel like are important about kind of you know, representing an independent design company. And, you know, one of the things is making sure that we're not kind of compromising integrity for short-term gains. I think, you know, we developed a product category that's, you know, not meant to be around for a season, but a generation. And I think that's exactly how we think about the brand. This isn't something that we're going to sell off and compromise our integrity to make a buck tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, this is something where we want to be thoughtful about our growth, make sure that it kind of leads to a long-term like trajectory. And, you know, we really want to be a brand that's around in 30 years and still stands for that kind of point of view of, you know, the balance of performance function and really rooted in kind of these core principles. The product stands up for itself, and that's something that kind of continues to evolve and iterate, you know, for kind of decades to come. So, yeah, I would say like that's kind of, you know, what we constantly hope for. The day-to-day is much different, right? in which you're like, why am I spending my time trying to perfect this thing? But you can't have one without the other, right? And I think that's just like the... I think the Dutch are very good at this, actually, is like just having to get the work done, right? Mm-hmm. Like of saying like, you know, I'm not too good for this. I need to just do this and this needs to be perfect. And if it's rushed, it will be subpar. If I like finish it and have to stay late, if I'm just like true to what it actually takes to get this done, like that's what we have to do. And then we can kind of get on to the next thing. And I think that's just something that's super important. Like anything you delay, anything you rush, like it will come through. And so being sure that like we can kind of balance those like opposite ends of the spectrum of making sure that like the executionary tasks that we kind of complete on a day-to-day basis are like held to that just bar of quality integrity. And then at the same time, like we do allow ourselves some moments to, after these things are complete, of like
to reflect,
you know, to reflect on them.
But you're not working with the Dutch, so
my now wife Lotte on designing an interior. But I think there's a lot of principles from like my, you know, time in Amsterdam that you kind of learn,
you take them into the company.
Absolutely. There's a very European or Northern European or Scandinavian kind of cultural approach and work philosophy, and there's a very New York one, and they're very different, right? And so I think having those kind of, they're not polarities, but having those two experiences to kind of form one perspective is really important. I think for us, like just that idea of like, how do we focus? I think for us, like we're constantly looking forward kind of on opportunities. We're constantly looking back at how to improve, but I think it's trying not to look to the side too much, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's always going to be doing like brands doing other things that are not related to us, but they're doing them well.
Yeah.
You know, how do we kind of make sure that like, the graph is going up and to the right and not just like zigzagging all over the place. And that's really important, I think, as a founder and kind of founding partners, to make sure that you kind of, you know, you do function as that like North Star to the brand, and, you know, are someone that's able to give, whether it's your customers, whether it's your team, kind of that level of just like certainty and kind of trust. Because everyone's in it, like building these things, the entire team is like pouring their hearts into this, and making sure that they kind of feel that I think alignment and big goals.
And how big is your team now?
If you count the stores, it's huge. Well, huge is, I mean,
because right now you have three pop-up stores, right? One in LA, one in New York City, one in San Francisco.
Yeah, exactly. So we are like our headquarter team, or like our New York design office team, is about like 16 people. And then if you add the pop-ups on top of that, it's probably about like 35, 40. So, you know, that's something as well where like the team size fluctuates pretty drastically based on kind of like these temporary experiences, because you need local people there to make sure that these things are kick-ass. Yeah. They're just, you know, performing. But yeah, we're about like, I would say like 15-ish full-time people in our New York City studio. You know, one of the things that we've kind of prided ourselves on as well is, you know, not kind of having any industry experience has given us an opportunity to learn how to do all of these things.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we've been kind of, I, I guess consistent on is developing all of our own content in-house. So,
yeah.
You know, whether that's our web development, our web design, our product development, our graphic design, our copy, basically everything is done in this New York City studio, which gives
yeah.
it, I think, all the team members a really kind of like 360 degree picture of, you know, what is happening with the brand, what is the product looking like. Like our customer experience team can like go over to the design boards and see kind of what's coming up for say spring 2018 or fall 2018.
Yeah.
And so kind
yeah.
of creating this like one atelier environment where kind of everything is really manifested from that little seed.
Yeah.
It's just a cool opportunity to kind of have that umbrella there.
Yeah.
And looking back now at like, okay, so you guys are now 3 years old,
mm-hmm.
right? Looking back at the first year, for example, would you have done stuff differently now when you look back?
Tell us your mistakes.
Yeah. I would do things differently yesterday. Yeah, I think there are so many things that, you know, you learn from and you
yeah.
would do differently.
Yeah.
I think...
Well, if you learn from them, that's...
Yeah, I think, like, you know, all these mistakes create, like, that little wrinkle in your brain, right? And so,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
it's a memory that you, you know you have to do it differently. And it's
yeah.
something where, like, whether it's from hiring, firing,
yeah.
you know, prototyping product, how much product you should order,
uh-huh.
all of these things you learn from. And I don't know, there's, like, this interesting kind of... again thing of like how do you learn and take all these things into consideration but not be jaded, right? How do you kind of like let that experience kind of hopefully lead to wisdom, not like apprehension?
Yeah.
And so that's something that like yeah literally on a daily basis it changes. I think every 6 months you almost go through this like kind of evolution process that you're like, wow, like we learned how to do those things differently, right? And so at the first like 6 months, it was really about like product development. What is the duration that it takes to get to a perfect sample?
Yeah.
I think, you know, basically what are the things, like what is one of the like most standout things that you like that I've learned? It's making sure that you have good people that really, I think, basically understand the complexities of their kind of responsibilities.
Yeah.
But that's something where, you know, without, you don't know what you don't know, right? And so you're going to continue not knowing unless you repeatedly over time you learn it, or you kind of get someone that has learned it and they've learned from experts. And so, you know, in product development, kind of in operations, like we've been able to bring on really talented people. And I think that's something, especially kind of, you know, when you find yourselves at these inflection points of growing a business of, okay, we need to, you know, double our production. That's something that you can do, but making sure that you're kind of getting input, or like, do you have a solid team member that really, you know, knows how to do this, is something where we've probably seen the biggest kind of like jumps, and not like a kind of a smooth line, but like more of an acceleration.
Mm.
But yeah, I think that's something where like you have to be nimble.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to be able to kind of, you know, work through the challenges. And, you know, if this was easy, everyone would be doing
exactly.
it, right?
Yeah.
And so knowing that, like, you have to have a little bit of resilience. Because
skin.
Because it's not easy. How do you take that with stride and kind of, like, you know, also assure the people around you that it's all moving forward?
And do you also talk to a lot of people from other brands, bigger brands maybe, that
yeah.
before you?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think one of the luxuries of being in New York is just the density of people that have done this before.
Yeah.
And no two stories are the same. But I think, you know, even having Cal as my partner in this, like,
mm-hmm.
he has such a broad network of so many, like, different brands, right? These kind of
yeah.
range from... like Stephen and Karma,
mm-hmm.
kind of more in the tech space, to, you know, various consumer goods, to restaurants, to design. And so being able to kind of leverage that network is a really powerful tool.
Yeah.
And something that, yeah, we wouldn't have otherwise.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, constantly kind of, you know, connecting with these brands, understanding what their challenge points and how they navigated those has been super helpful, you know, and like really helps, I think, us kind of one, either justify kind of our strategy, or two, kind of look at it and kind of critique, okay, what is an area or opportunity of improvement?
So even before you started this, started the Arrivals, you talked to other brands and to other people for advice or not really?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. So before we started, that's kind of how we actually landed on outerwear. We were trying to identify like what was a category that we wanted to focus on, but I think through that process, it was constantly kind of meeting with brands, kind of showing them, you know, the ideas that we were working on. And as I mentioned earlier, these ideas were kind of, you know, quite broad in terms of kind of various product categories. But that was something where, like, kind of having people who had experience being able to kind of, you know, voice their kind of, you know, areas of enthusiasm or areas of concern was super valuable. And you know, ultimately what led to outerwear was we had kind of this full collection, right? So you imagine kind of APC as a full collection, pants, shirts, knitwear, shoes, jackets, etc. And I think we were creating something at that time that was kind of representative of like us wanting to have a, you know, a solution for just every single challenge that we have in terms of, you know, a brand that kind of represents us. And I think some of the most valuable feedback that we got was like, you know, it feels like your background in architecture and the kind of outerwear that you guys have in your collection is such a strong opportunity just to focus, right? And I think that's something that probably a lot of the advice that you get from people who have done it before is make sure you maintain your focus. There's going to be a lot of opportunities all the time. And there's going to be people saying, do it this way or, you know, do it that way.
Stick to your story,
but
right?
But just kind of,
stick to a bigger, bigger story. That's the thing with all of the brands. But that's mainly a startup. Well, it's not a startup approach, but it's how a startup works as well, because they have a one product.
Yeah.
And that gives you something or that does something for you.
Yeah.
And you need to stick to that. You need to stick to the main, the base of the product. And then you can do other stuff, but if it needs to, like Nest.
Yeah.
It's for stuff in your home, you know, controlling your home.
Yeah.
Or Apple, it's basically the same.
Yeah.
If they introduce something that's not, sticks to that, that doesn't stick to that core.
Sure.
People won't buy it.
Sure.
Or just buy it at some other company.
Yeah. And I think then kind of like being able to meet with whether it's peers, whether it's kind of, you know, experienced people from that field, being able to kind of like run those ideas past people and trying to get kind of like unbiased feedback on opportunity versus, you know, possible risk is something that like is super important.
So you probably would never make underwear.
Not yet.
Underwear for outside.
Yeah. The opposite outer. Yeah, probably not.
No.
Yeah.
Ah, bummer.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That makes sense.
Yeah, sorry, Rude.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Nicey.
Yeah, we always end with the, you know, you already gave a lot of advices during your story, but we always end with the big Dr. Phil
question. Ooh.
Jerry Springer.
Can I do the accent, the Dr. Phil accent?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
So, what advice would you give us?
I mean, for you two, it's kind of maintaining that like trust in each other, right? That what you two kind of decided to do is going to be kind of the core and founding values for, you know, what your business is kind of manifested for. There's going to be a lot of people that are telling you to do, you know, things differently as you go along, which is always helpful, but at the same time make sure that you don't lose focus and kind of the value that, like, you know, you bring. Like, I don't know, for me, I know I mentioned like Levi's, Apple, like even Supreme is another brand that comes to mind, of like their point of view is the most important piece of that brand. Like, totally. Supreme, the product, like the t-shirts are Okay.
Yeah.
The product itself is not great, right? But
no.
They represent some young kind of skate kids that don't give a fuck, that are from downtown New York. And
exactly.
Anyone who kind of walks into the store feels like they are kind of the same thing, that they're these irreverent, rebellious young kids, and that they cannot give a fuck by standing in line for 8 hours and buying a $70 t-shirt, right? And that's where the value of the product is.
There's this website where a guy took off all the Supreme logos of the products.
Yeah, I gotta see.
Funny.
Yeah.
Because it's just a regular product.
This is a HEMA shirt. What's up with that?
Yeah, this is just a fire extinguisher without a logo.
Yeah.
It's just a.
Yeah, but I think like that.
The not giving a fuck is
point
the
point of view.
Yeah,
and understanding, okay, this is what Jeroen and Paul bring to the table, and this is the way in which that can manifest, right? So like, as long as you kind of keep that focus, like that's where you guys will be happiest. That's where you guys are going to be the most successful.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, where people will really start to respect your opinion. So yeah, I think that's like what we're all kind of searching for. That's the Mecca. I'll let you know when we find it. But I'm super stoked.
I'll let
you
know
guys.
When we find it too.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's great. Thank
awesome,
you.
Guys.
Thank you so much. Thank
you
for your time and good luck with everything.
Yeah.
Cool.
And hopefully you'll open a pop-up store soon in Amsterdam.
Yeah, we'll see you in Amsterdam.
That'll be great.
The new rain jacket.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool.
Thanks, man.
Cool, guys.
Thanks.